नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 20। चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द डायनेस्टी ऑफ पुरु। टेक्स्ट नंबर 17 ऑनवर्ड्स। अमोघवीर्यो राजऋषिर् महिष्यां वीर्यमाददे शोभूते स्वपुरं यात कालेन सुतसासुतम्। ट्रांसलेशन बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। किंग दुष्मंत हु नेवर डिस्चार्ज सीमन विदाउट अ रिजल्ट placed his semen at night in the womb of his queen Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. Thereafter, in due course of time, Shakuntala gave birth to a son. There is no purport, so we'll take the next two verses. Text number 18. Kanva Kumarasya Vane Chakre Samuchita Kriya बध्वा मृगेन्द्रम तरसा क्रीडति स्म स बालका। ट्रांसलेशन। इन द फॉरेस्ट कण्व मुनि परफॉर्म्ड ऑल द रिचुअलिस्टिक सेरेमनीज कंसर्निंग द न्यू बॉर्न चाइल्ड। लेटर द बॉय बिकेम सो पावरफुल दैट ही वुड कैप्चर अ लायन एंड प्ले विथ इट। टेक्स्ट नंबर 19। तम दुरत्यय विक्रांतम आदाय प्रमोदोत्तमा हरेर अंशांश संभूतम भर्तुर अंतिकम आगमत। ट्रांसलेशन वंस अगेन। शकुंतला द बेस्ट ऑफ ब्यूटिफुल वुमन अलॉन्ग विथ हर सन हुज स्ट्रेंथ वॉज इनसरमाउंटेबल एंड हु वॉज अ पार्शियल एक्सपेंशन ऑफ द सुप्रीम गॉडहेड अप्रोच्ड हर हस्बैंड दुष्मंत। टेक्स्ट 20। यदा न जगृहे राजा भार्या पुत्रौ अनिंदितौ शृण्वतां सर्वभूतानां केवाग् आह शरीरिणी। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। व्हेन द किंग रिफ्यूज्ड टू एक्सेप्ट हिज वाइफ एंड सन हु वर बोथ इरिप्रोचेबल एंड अनएम्बॉडीड वॉइस स्पोक फ्रॉम द स्काई एज एन वुमन एंड वॉज हर्ड बाय एवरीवन प्रेजेंट। Purport. Maharaj Dushmant knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his own wife and son. But because they came from outside and were unknown to the citizens, he at first declined to accept them. Shakuntala, however, was so chaste that an omen from the sky declared the truth so that others could hear. When everyone heard from the woman that Shakuntala and her child were truly the king's wife and son, the king gladly accepted them. Hare Krishna. I'd like to seek blessings from all the assembled Vaishnavas. Very difficult to speak on this topic. The whole ninth canto is full of such topics and somehow no Bhagavatam speaker can avoid it. So the topic for today's discussion is chastity, and I seek blessings from all devotees to speak on this. Definitely we will be providing references from Srila Prabhupada's lectures and his notes, and we'll be also quoting some devotees who gave previous classes in our temple. So today's discussion will be threefold. First, we will go and check out the detailed story lineup of this particular pastime of Shakuntala, Dushmanta or Dushyanta and Bharat. Mahabharat Adi Parva speaks in detail about this wonderful story. So we will see that first. Then we will focus on the topic of chastity of Shakuntala. And based on a very wonderful lecture of Srila Prabhupada, we will speak and elaborate on this topic. And the last, today is a very auspicious day of the occasion of the appearance of Srimati Rukmini Devi. So we'll see the connection of today's topic and see how beautifully she exhibited the characteristics of being chaste to Krishna. So in the Mahabharata Adi Parva, wonderful description comes about Kanva Muni, his daughter Shakuntala, and Shakuntala getting married to Dushmanta and the child Bharat Maharaj. The whole ninth canto is a discussion about various kings. Just some days ago, Damodar Prabhu was mentioning that how the whole tree of Raja Rishis is mentioned in the ninth canto. And then he also gave a wonderful lecture on the tree of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So definitely we are not hearing about some ordinary kings here. They are very extraordinary. In fact, they are Raja Rishis. And throughout ninth canto, we are seeing that we are not focusing much on the details of their exalted characteristics, who they were. But we are, in one sense, Bhagavatam focuses on what are the troubles they went through when they attempted sense gratification in their life. And then what the realization they got. So the focus of the Bhagavatam 9th canto is the realization the kings achieved after they underwent the trial of sense gratification. So the whole of 9th canto is full of such things. How sense gratification leads to suffering. I was just trying to make connection why this whole of 9th canto is full of all these descriptions. And maybe a speculation on my part, but the 10th canto is coming soon. Lord Krishna is going to appear. And before Lord Krishna is going to appear, definitely one has to be fully convinced that this material world of sense gratification is useless. 9th canto makes it clear what is gold and what is iron. So not some kings, but extraordinary Rajarishi kings whose stories are mentioned in the Puranas and the Mahabharata, what realizations they got when they underwent, when they went to this sense gratification. So that is mentioned. So in the Mahabharata Adi Parva, the description is given of how when Vishwamitra Muni was performing his tapasya, and Indra got very much afraid. And then Indra sends Menaka. And we know the story that how Menaka disturbs Vishwamitra Muni. And Vishwamitra Muni forgets that he is doing tapasya, and then he becomes totally engaged in sense gratification with Menaka. So while they are enjoying their life in the Himalayas, on the banks of River Malini, it is mentioned Menaka gave birth to a baby child. Now Menaka was a damsel from heaven. She was not interested in babysitting. So she went back to heaven. The baby was alone. Vishwamitra Muni realized, where I am in the forest. I left my kingdom, came to the tapasya, and now I have a baby in my hand. So he knew that Indra had played a trick, and he became prey to the trick. So he left the baby child and he went for tapasya because his mission was something else. So this small girl child was left crying on the banks of River Malini, near Himalayas, very close to a dense jungle, unprotected. Even though unprotected, Krishna always gives protection to those who are requiring his protection. So in this case, even though the forest was full of wild animals, it is mentioned that a group of birds took pity on this child. This group of birds belong to the species of Shakunta or Shakunto. And they protected this girl for time being from all the dangerous animals who would come, wild animals who would come to drink water from the river. So soon, Kanva Rishi followed the track. He also came to River Malini for his bath. And then he saw an extraordinary sight. A small baby girl, very beautiful, lying amidst the protection of these birds. So he could not make any head and tail of it. So all the birds started speaking to Kanva Rishi. And Kanva Rishi, being a mystic sage, he knew the language of birds. And then from the birds, he came to know the story of who this girl is. And when he came to know that this girl was born from Vishwamitra Muni and Menaka, Kanva thought that it is his responsibility to take care of the child, because it is mentioned in Mahabharata that Kanva Rishi was a very good friend of Vishwamitra Muni. So he knew that Vishwamitra was on his task of becoming a Brahma Rishi, and he could not spend time with the child. and now the child is unprotected, the birds are wanting him to take care of the child. A sort of compassion, this sage picks up the child. And this child becomes Kanva Muni's daughter. So Mahabharata mentions that there are three kinds of father. There is one birth-giving father who gives birth to the child. Second is one who saves the life of a child. And that is called as life-saver father. And third is one who maintains the child by providing food and clothing. So in this case, Kanva Muni became, of the three, two type of father. He saved the life of the child, and also he maintained the child henceforth. So Kanva, when he wanted to name the child, he named the child as Shakuntala, because Shakunto, the birds, protected her. And therefore, because he saw Shakunto birds protecting this girl, so the name he gave was Shakuntala. And then it is mentioned that how, as a responsibility, he very nicely trained her. And soon she grew into a very beautiful lady. And we see a description of how here Dushyanta or Dushmanta is meeting Shakuntala. Something about Dushmanta, from one point of view in the Bhagavatam, we see that how Dushman suddenly is coming and is getting attracted to Shakuntala. So you may think that what kind of king he is. But if you refer to Mahabharata, we see that Dushmanta was not an ordinary king. He was king of the entire earth planet. He was called as a Rajarishi, in fact. The description of his kingdom is given in the Mahabharata. It is mentioned, in Dushmanta's own kingdom, that is the whole earth planet, when he was reigning, there was no Varna Sankara. That means all the children were born from Garbhadhan Samskar. That's a great challenge. Second, the earth yielded all types of crops without even seed being sowed in the soil. The earth was so happy by the reign of the king that the crops were coming out like this. Each and every field was full of minerals, mines, jewels, and therefore every farmer was there on the earth. Did not need to plow the field because everything was coming automatically. And no one had to go and check out where are the mines, because everyone's field was a mine. So this was the kingdom of Dushmanta. No one ever committed sin in his kingdom. Four varnas and four ashramas were executed properly. There were no thief, no criminals. The word hunger was an alien word. In his rule, there were no diseases. The seasons were all on time, and all the food grains were full of rasa or taste. So you can appreciate this compared to the place where we are staying now in Kali Yuga. So we can ascertain that Dushmanta was not an ordinary king, he was a Rajarishi. So Dushmanta now is on his hunting expedition in the forest. Kshatriyas hunt for various reasons. One of the reasons is Kshatriya has to fight on the battlefield and he requires training. So for that, Kshatriya goes with sword in his hand and he fights one-to-one combat with a wild, ferocious animal. So that's his training. And the animal so killed is given a royal reception, a royal samadhi or whatever you call it, cremation. And that is one reason. The second reason also is the king is supposed to check the balance in the forest. If the king sees that the balance of the forest is disturbed, if there are too many wild animals, then the sages living in the ashram get troubled. So the Rajarishis also go to check the balance. The balance that wild animals should be almost same as the other animals which are there in the forest. To maintain the balance, Dushmanta had now gone for a hunting expedition. So while hunting, it is mentioned that he went along with one division of his army, and his hunting expedition, he killed many ferocious animals like lion, tigers, wild elephants, etc. So being engaged in this act of hunting, Dushmanta went deep inside the jungle. And then soon, he crossed one jungle along with his army, and suddenly he came across a barren land. Nothing was growing there. And then in the barren land, Bhishmata became very thirsty, became very hungry. So he continued to cross the barren land, and as soon as he crossed the barren land, he came to another forest. And this forest was very beautiful, which Bhishmata had never seen such a forest. As soon as he entered the forest, he saw that this forest was inhabited by great rishis. They had their ashramas there. And in the forest, there was a beautiful breeze which was blowing. Each and every tree either had fruits or flowers. Not a single thorny tree you could see in that forest. And beautiful voice of singing birds cooed all through the forest. This enticed Maharaj Dushmanta. He became very happy, pleased. In fact, half of his hunger and thirst was gone because of just coming across such a beautiful forest. And then he goes ahead. Then he sees a very beautiful ashram. He comes to know this ashram belongs to Kanva Rishi. So he tells his army to be outside on the gate. And with a group of ministers, Maharaj Dushmanta enters the compound. While entering the compound, Maharaj Dushmanta removes his kingly attire. He removes his crown, his kingship attire, because he wants to now go and meet Kanva Rishi. And therefore he decides that I want to go and seek his blessings. So I should go in a proper way, in a humble way, to approach him. So removing his kingly attire, he gives it to the army, and then with his ministers, he goes ahead in the compound. And then, when they come near the kutir, the main kutir of Kanva Rishi, then Dushmanta tells his ministers also to stay outside the kutir. And then he goes inside to meet Kanva Rishi. And then we see the 3-4 verses which we have discussed since some days, that how Dushmanta meets Shakuntala, and there is a discussion. And then Dushmanta comes to know that Shakuntala is also from Kshatriya race, and therefore he proposes her. And the proposal is accepted. Shakuntala makes a request that if ever Dushmanta wants to marry Shakuntala, and Shakuntala tells that the child which is born from our combination should be the king of the entire earth. Dushmanta agrees. And then we see this particular translation which we are reading today, that how Dushmanta goes away and Shakuntala is bearing a child. And it is mentioned that 3 years later, Shakuntala gives birth to a very beautiful child. When the child is born, flowers are dropped by demigods from the heaven. The demigods play musical instruments and apsaras dance at this wonderful occasion. The king of heaven, Indra, himself comes down and congratulates Kanva Rishi and Shakuntala and mentions that this child is not an ordinary child. In fact, Prabhupada also mentions there that this child was a partial expansion of Supreme Godhead. So he comes and names the child as Bharat. And then Bharat grows up. And the characteristics of Bharat is mentioned that at the age of 6, Bharat was so courageous and valorous that he would go out and catch lions and tigers, wild boars, wild buffaloes and elephants, and bring them to the ashram, tie them up, and even tame them. That was the power of Bharat. It was as if this child had no plastic toys. He was playing with actual animals. Any Rakshasa, any ghost or hobgoblin would even dare to come near Kanva Rishi's ashram. This 6-year-old boy would catch them and beat them up. Seeing this extraordinary child, Kanva Rishi decided that I should now give him Vedic knowledge. So by his mystic siddhi, knowledge transfer took place. Bharat did not have to wait for all the years of education. Just by mystic siddhi of Kanva Rishi, entire knowledge of Vedas and the Shastras were given to Bharat Maharaj by Kanva Rishi. At the age of 12, seeing the majesty of this child, Kanva Rishi informed Shakuntala that now this boy is fit to become the prince, now fit for Rajyabhishek. So now you should go to your husband's house. And then we see there that now when Shakuntala is coming here, and the king rejects Shakuntala. And Prabhupada mentions why? Because they came from outside and no one knew them. So Maharaj Dushmanta felt that if he suddenly just out of nowhere accepts Shakuntala and Bharat, then people will think that our king is very easily susceptible to things. We don't know who this person is, who this lady is. Suddenly she's coming and telling that this is your child. And this king suddenly accepts. So initially Maharaj Dushyant rejects. But Shakuntala's chastity is so much that there is an unembodied voice called Akashvani, which proclaims that Shakuntala is very chaste and that this son, this boy, Bharat, is actually the son of Maharaj Dushyant. So this is the story lineup from Mahabharata for us. So Prabhupada in the purport speaks about chastity of Shakuntala. Even though we see Shakuntala's birth was a difficult kind of birth, born from enticing of a great sage. But no matter what the birth was, the training was important. Kanva Rishi trained the child in such a way that she became one of the chaste ladies in the history of mankind. An unembodied voice from the sky spoke to proclaim her chastity. This is Shakuntala. So, I was just going through some Prabhupada lectures, what Prabhupada speaks on chastity. And I found a very nice lecture by Srila Prabhupada in London. This is 1973. So I thought I will just refer this lecture on chastity. That's very easy to do than to speak your own realizations on this topic. So in the London, Prabhupada takes this verse from Bhagavad Gita. This is 1.40. Adharma bhivavad Krishna pradushyanti kulastriya strishu dushtashu varshneya jayate varna sankara. When irreligion is prominent in the family of Krishna, the women of the family become corrupt. And from the degradation of womanhood, or descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. So Prabhupada in his lectures takes different points and explains those points very nicely. The first point Prabhupada takes up is, Prabhupada says, without good population in the society, how can you expect peace and prosperity? It is not possible. Prabhupada says the whole Vedic civilization was geared to give good population. And Prabhupada mentions not the population which we are seeing today, addicted to killing, drinking and other sinful activities. If such population is there, Prabhupada says, everything will be polluted. And Prabhupada mentions the whole population is polluted today. Even the greatest country, America, the president of America is convicted. Yatha Raja Tatha Praja. What to speak of ordinary men? The great kings themselves are convicted for all these problems, population pollution. And then Prabhupada says, so there must be a good population. And the second point Prabhupada mentions is, but how the good population will come? Prabhupada says, to have a good population, the woman should be very chaste. This is the basic principle of Vedic civilization. And how to keep the woman chaste? Prabhupada says, it was a function of the responsible father, or in the absence of father, the function of elder brother. He must get the lady, the girl, married. It is compulsory. There was no compulsory for man to marry. Man may remain brahmachari. By training, he can abstain from sex. But if woman is not protected very strictly, it is very, very difficult. So Prabhupada is speaking in London, and he could sense that audience is westernized. So Prabhupada says, we are discussing Shastra. Don't think otherwise. And Prabhupada is saying that it's not my own claim. I am speaking against something. But Shastra is saying, and Shastra is followed, then the whole society will be experiencing peace and prosperity. And what training, Prabhupada mentions, what kind of training is expected? Not that IIT, MBBS, not like that. The training is, if woman is trained, a girl is trained from the very beginning. What training? You should remain chaste. That is dharma. That is satita. Sati means chastity. And then Prabhupada gives wonderful stories of chaste ladies from the Shastra. Prabhupada first speaks about the story of Nala Damayanti. And Prabhupada says, Nala was a great king, very rich, fabulously rich. And suddenly one day he became a pauper, beggar on the street. But his wife, who also came from a rich king, that means she was the daughter of a rich king, she never gave up her husband. She remained loyal to her husband even though the king had become now a beggar. Prabhupada mentions that She was not thinking, why shall I live with him? Better take a divorce. She never thought like that. The extreme poverty, Prabhupada says, the husband and wife were putting on the same cloth, half and half, but still there was no divorce. Then Prabhupada says, not to speak of olden days, in 1935, I saw, Prabhupada says, there was a beggar. This beggar, his face was defaced. Probably he may have an accident. All his eyes, his nose, all ruptured. And he was begging on the street. Yet he had a young, beautiful wife next to him. And he was begging. Even though he could not see, he could not do anything, Prabhupada mentions, I saw that man was very clean and neat. And so was his wife. That means every day the wife would take the man back to home, clean him nicely, bring him back. The wife, even though young, never left her husband. So this is Prabhupada's personal example from this 1930s. And then Prabhupada mentions many more stories. Prabhupada speaks about one story from Ramanujacharya's life. Ramanujacharya had one disciple, was very poor. So Ramanujacharya went to that disciple's house. That disciple, the male member, was not there in the house. So Ramanujacharya, along with the disciples, they are calling, is anyone there inside? And the lady Lakshmi, she is there inside. Prabhupada mentions the point here. Ramanujacharya knocked the door. There was no response. She could not come out. Why? Because she was so poor, the lady had no sufficient clothing also on her body. So Ramanujacharya realized, and therefore he threw her his own cloth. And then properly clothed, the lady came out, gave a fitting reception to her Guru Maharaj. And then she realized that there was nothing in the house to be given. So then we know the story that how she went out to a grocer, to a landlord. And this landlord always want to have illicit relationship with this lady. And she always kind of neglected this man. So when the landlord saw this lady approaching, he was very happy. And she demanded that, my Guru Maharaj has come, I want to serve. So he told, okay, but if you should satisfy me. And the lady agreed. She took all the grocery on the loan and she went to the house and she prepared a very huge feast. And the man came to know the Guru Maharaj has come and he saw that huge feast. He was surprised. From where you got all this? And Lakshmi had to tell everything with her head down. And the husband became very happy. And when Ramanujacharya came to know about this, then Ramanujacharya told, don't worry. Just take this Mahaprasad of mine and go and give it to the grocer. So as soon as the grocer, he saw the lady coming and something was there eatable in her hands. So he ate the Mahaprasad and then suddenly transformation in the life of the grocer. And she mentions, Prabhupada says, oh, such a chaste woman you are, such a faithful, you are my mother. You take more ingredients from me to serve your Guru Maharaj. So Mr. Prabhupada gives three examples of chaste ladies. So Prabhupada said, this is family tradition. Family tradition is dharma. So the duty of a father or elder brother is to do kanyadan, that is, the daughter should be married, that is dharma. Dharma can never be given up. When people become neglectful of family traditions and religious principles, then adharma creeps in. So Prabhupada says, kula striya means, kula means family, and striya means woman. So woman must be belonging to a respectable family, that's default. Woman means respectable family. And Prabhupada gives an example again. That in our college or school days, Prabhupada says, that once I went to my friend's house and we were sitting and discussing. And then one sweeper lady came there, Prabhupada says. And she had covered her head with her sari and she was standing there for a long time. And Prabhupada says, I realized that she was waiting for us to get part. She didn't want to go very close to the men. So she waited very nicely. And without her speaking, both these men, Prabhupada and his friend, realized that her chastity demanded their attention, even though they were very much immersed in discussion. So immediately they both parted and the lady went ahead. So Prabhupada says, this is very important. This lady was feeling, how can I go between two men? So this is Vedic culture, Prabhupada says. Women should not be allowed to mix with men. Not allowed at all. Then Prabhupada says, in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, man is like ghee, butter pot, and woman is like fire. Therefore, as soon as there is fire and butter pot, the butter pot must melt. Therefore, they should be kept aside. These are the statements of Shastra. Basically, it is not just the sole responsibility of a man or a lady, but it is a responsibility of the entire human civilization to check that the butter and fire should not come together. That's very important. So every man should know that he is butter, and every lady should know that she is fire, because it is mentioned in the scriptures. Kavichandra Maharaj was mentioning a very nice point. He was saying this analogy of butter is very amazing. He was mentioning that butter does not require fire to come near butter to melt. Butter exposed in the environment also melts. And therefore Srila Prabhupada once told many of his sannyasis that you should all write on your head, "Keep me cool." Prabhupada told his sannyasis should write on the head. Why? He is not saying, "I want to be cool," but "keep me cool." That means it is the responsibility of entire society to keep this renounced order cool. It is not just individual responsibility. It is the responsibility of the entire society. That is called cooperation. So butter and fire should not come together. So the lady is compared to a fire here. Every lady should know, no matter how cool she is ultimately a fire. So safe distance has to be kept. Radhanath Maharaj was once giving lecture, and he was mentioning a very nice point. Even if butter is kept for 20 years in refrigerator, still when the butter comes out and the fire is there, the butter will melt. So the idea is, no matter how pure the butter is or how low the fire is, they have to be kept separate. In our temple, we have many kinds of butter we use for cake and cookies. One is Gagangiri butter, which our devotees have found is little less cost. So 200 rupees is the 1 kilo charge. There is Amul butter, 250 rupees. And then we have our Uttam Maheshwari's pure ghee butter from that, you know. So churned by hand, and milk from pure cows, Indian cows, grazing in the forest. All kinds of butter. No matter which butter and no matter which fire. Prabhupada says there are different kinds of fire. One is the wood fire, other is the fire from gas stove, other is the electric fire. No matter which fire, as soon as butter and fire comes, immediately there is havoc. So history has repeated so many times, and we have seen that there was pure butter and there was low fire. Still it melted. And because the society did not take responsibility, allowed that mixing, and therefore there was a chaos and there was breaking of so many faiths in society. Srila Prabhupada continues. Prabhupada says, "Sometimes in India, I am criticized that I keep woman and man in the same temple." Prabhupada says, "I defend myself. What can I do? I am preaching in the Western world. If I don't allow ladies to come in a temple, then they will feel that Krishna consciousness is not meant for them. Krishna consciousness is for all people. So I am giving chance to everyone, even at a risk," Prabhupada says. That is my reply to all of them. So Prabhupada says to all, therefore chastity is very, very important thing for producing good population. One should not give up chastity. So after this hot topic, I thought of discussing something sweet. Sometimes when you eat food, you are on a prasadam, and suddenly when chili comes, then you require something sweet to cover up. So I thought of discussing something about the sweet characteristics of Rukmini Devi now. I have very less time. I'll go ahead fast. So we are discussing from the beautiful pastimes from the Krishna book. And we are discussing, we'll come to the conclusion of Rukmini Devi's chastity now. Krishna tested Rukmini Devi's chastity once, and Rukmini Devi passed with flying colors. And Krishna gave a certificate that she is epitome of chastity. So this is the pastime which we are discussing from Krishna book. This is chapter number 59, talks between Krishna and Rukmini. So Prabhupada mentions in Krishna book that once Krishna was in the palace of his most dearest queen, Rukmini Devi. So Rukmini Devi had many maid servants, and they were all there wanting to serve Krishna. So some of them are fanning Krishna with a chamara. Prabhupada said, chamara is what? Chamara is a yak tail to yak tail fly whisk. That means yak tail whisk to keep the flies away, Prabhupada says. So the maid servants are fanning Krishna. When Rukmini saw that maid servants are fanning Krishna, she was not happy. She took the chamara in her own hands. Bhagavata mentions this chamara was not ordinary chamara. This chamara was made of full, this handle was made of pure gold. There are jewels bedecked on the chamara. It was very beautiful and decorative. When Rukmini Devi took the chamara in her hand, the beauty of the chamara became more enhanced. Because Rukmini Devi was fanning the Lord with her own special devotion. Prabhupada mentions otherwise, many other places, that Rukmini Devi herself was serving Krishna. And Prabhupada says, Lakshmi Sahasra Sambrama Sevyamanam. Krishna is being served by thousands and thousands and millions of gopis and Lakshmis. In fact, Bhagavata mentions that how sometimes Lakshmi Devi has no service. She takes up a broom and starts brooming. And Prabhupada says there is no dust in Golok Vrindavan or Vaikuntha. But why she is brooming? She is brooming so that she can catch the attention of Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. That is the service. So Rukmini Devi is very happy serving Krishna. She is just waiting for a chance to serve Krishna. So we can see here from the example of Rukmini Devi that serving Krishna is a privilege. It is not a burden. Shaman Prabhu was mentioning once in his class, very beautiful example. I liked it so much that I thought of discussing here. In a king's darbar, sometimes musicians are employed to play for the king. So whole day they are playing music in one corner. Now what happens, the king will not always keep seeing and nodding his head at the musicians, very nice, very nice. He will be busy in administration. So the musicians who are playing the whole day, they are not thinking, oh, now the king is not looking at me, why should I play? No, they keep playing always. Why? Because they are not worrying about whether king is watching or not. They are just happy that we got this prestigious position of sitting in the king's court and playing the music. That is the reward, getting a chance to play for the king, whether he is hearing or not hearing. So Prabhuji was mentioning this point that many times we are very considerate, what my service will bring me, very reward conscious. But service itself is reward. And Rukmini Devi is showed by example that she wanted to serve. That was the only thing she had in her mind. So Prabhupada says in Krishna book that pastimes of Radha and Krishna are very simple and very rural, whereas those of Rukmini and Krishna are very polished and urban, like those of Lakshmi Narayan. At this time, in this particular pastime, Lord Krishna wanted to experience the angry mood of Rukmini Devi. Somehow Krishna could never experience this mood of Rukmini Devi. And Krishna had already experienced such moods with different queens of his, Jambavati, Satyabhama and other queens, but never Rukmini Devi. And in the Krishna book, Krishna recollects many such pastimes of how Rukmini Devi, he failed to make Rukmini Devi angry. One story mentioned is that how once Narad Muni came to Dwarka and he gave a Parijata flower to Rukmini. And Rukmini was very happy and pleased with that. When Satyabhama came to know about that, she became very envious. And she went and demanded that I also want the flower of Parijata. In fact, her demand was so high, Prabhupada mentions that Krishna had to go and get a tree of Parijat for her. So even though a tree of Parijat is now in the garden of Satyabhama and Rukmini has only a flower, Krishna thought that Rukmini now might demand a tree. But Prabhupada says, but she was very grave and she was simply satisfied in serving Krishna. So in this way, Krishna could not see the angry mood of Rukmini. So now, Krishna wanted to irritate her. Krishna had done it with all her remaining queens, and he was successful. So now he is going to try with Rukmini Devi. Krishna put forth many irritating questions to Rukmini. Krishna calls Rukmini, who is a queen now, as princesses. Not queen nor Rukmini. Why? Because the next statement he is saying is very, very much relevant. Krishna says, many great people wanted to marry you. They were great kings or they were great princes. They were wealthy, famous, beautiful. In fact, your father and your brother also had no objection. Shishupal was chosen for you. And this guy was so mad and lusty for you. If you had married her, He would have remained your faithful servant till now. Now, of course, Krishna says, now you are my beautiful wife, but still I inform you of my position. I am inferior to all these princes who wanted to marry you. Rukmini is very shocked to hear that. Krishna continues, because of Jarasandha's fear, I could not live on land. I left Mathura. And now I am hiding here in an island within the water. I am not heroic. I am a coward. I am still afraid. And here also I am not safe. Krishna says, all the worldly kings are inimical of me. And why? Why are they my enemy? Because of my own activities. I have done something because of which they became my enemy. And Krishna says, I am in Dwarka, but I am not the king. Whatever I have is not mine also. Plus, I have no fixed aim in life, Krishna says. People also understand this. Many people know that this Krishna has no fixed aim, no goal. People expected that as Nanda Maharaj, I will follow his footsteps. I will become a Vaishya. And that I will be faithful to Radharani. But see, all of a sudden, I left both of them. Because I wanted to become famous prince. But you see, till today I have no kingdom. So people do not know who am I. Am I a coward boy or a king? Am I son of Nanda or son of Vasudev? Therefore people call me a vagabond. And you have selected a vagabond husband. I am not polished, Krishna says. I do not know social etiquette. I was brought up in village. Village people do not know much etiquettes of urban life. See my case. I am not satisfied. Not satisfied with one wife. I have 16,108 and still I cannot please them all. My behavior also is not nice with them. You are already conscious of it, Krishna tells Rukmini. That I am never with them. I keep moving here and there always. And I do not know city etiquette, Krishna says. And the result of associating with me is, Krishna says, any woman who follows me ultimately has to cry for the rest of his life, her life. See the example of Raj Gopis. And here also you are realizing that. Krishna continues, I am penniless. After I was born in Mathura, I was sent to Vrindavan. And there I took care of cows. Not a single cow was my own cow. I was taking care of some other's cow. I remained penniless in Vrindavan. And here also I don't have anything. Everything belongs to King Jarasandha. What to speak of me? Even my devotees are penniless. Krishna tells, rich people are not interested in me. And those who come to me generally are very poor. Therefore, Rukmini, your selection is not very intelligent. You appear very intelligent, trained by your father and your brother. But you made a great mistake by choosing me. And then Krishna mentions, but there is no harm. Better late than ever. You are at liberty even now to choose a suitable husband equal to you in family, opulence, education. Whatever mistake you have made is forgiven. Without seeing me, you choose me just by hearing about it, about me. So, it's a mistake. You can reject me still now. I will not mind. Take another one. And Prabhupada says, Krishna was proposing Rukmini to divorce him. And divorce him at a time when Rukmini had many grown-up children who were also married. So it was unexpected thing for even Rukmini. For Rukmini, all this proposal by Krishna was crazy. And she thought, how could Krishna even say such things? She was so simple that she became very anxious. Her anxiety grew more and more. She felt actually that Krishna will go away from her. And then Krishna saw that this is all, these emotions are building up in Rukmini. So Krishna then wanted to put the icing on the cake. And Krishna said, all great beautiful princes like Shishupal, Shalva, Jarasandha, Dantavakra, and your brother Rukmini, they are all my enemies. They hate me. They are puffed up. So to teach them a lesson, I kidnapped you. Not that I was attracted to you, but I want to teach them a lesson, so I kidnapped you. And he says, Sukadeva Goswami mentions here very nicely, Krishna spent maximum time of his life in Dwarka with Rukmini. And Rukmini became a bit proud of her good fortune. That Krishna never leaves me. So Krishna never likes devotee to be proud. So as soon as this happens, Krishna immediately breaks the pride of a devotee. And here Krishna said so many things hard for Rukmini to hear. By this her pride went down, because he suddenly realized that Krishna, who never leaves me, may leave me at any moment. So Prabhupada mentioned that Rukmini knew Krishna, his Supreme Lord, he can do anything. For Krishna to leave Rukmini is not a difficult thing. And therefore she became very much devastated. She didn't reply. Her heart palpitation grew. She started crying. A chamar in her hand fell down. She could not go either here or there. She stood there motionless. She lost all her power. And the result was, she fell down like a banana tree, unconscious, turned down by a great whirlwind. Lord Krishna saw this. Lord Krishna had not thought that his joking would be so serious. So seeing her condition, Prabhupada says, Krishna manifested four hands. Instead of two, he had two hands, four hands. Because he wanted to immediately recover Rukmini. So pulled her up, took care of her, and Rukmini came back to consciousness. And Prabhupada says, Krishna is exhibiting an example of an ideal householder. Prabhupada says, just like householder, he is working whole day and night, all of the day working hard. So in the evening he wants some jokes, so he plays with his wife. So Krishna also, like an ordinary household, in his transcendental pastime is playing, cutting jokes with his wife. So when Rukmini came to know that Krishna was joking, she was very happy, she was very pleased. And then Rukmini's turn now. So Rukmini starts now defending whatever Krishna has spoken. So Rukmini Devi starts speaking about every point which Krishna had taken up. And the point Krishna mentions first is how that Krishna tells the first point which we heard before, that many great people wanted to marry you, and that you have chosen me. I am inferior to all princes. So Rukmini Devi answers, yes, your statement that we are not fit combination is right. How can I be fit to you? You are great. Your supreme personality of Godhead. Brahma and Shiva are worshipping you. And I am the product of three modes of material nature. How I can even be equal in par with you? So in this way, what you told is that we are not fit match. It's right. I am not qualified for your association. Then you mentioned that you are hiding in the sea afraid of Jarasan. So Rukmini Sevis mentions that being afraid of kings, you hide in shelter of sea. But who is the king of the material world? She mentioned the three modes of material nature are the king of the material world. And you are hiding in the core of the devotee's heart. And thus the three modes of material nature cannot affect you. You are inside the devotee's heart. The third point is all worldly kings are inimical of Krishna, of you. And that by your activities you have become his enemies. Rukmini Devi says, who are the worldly kings? The senses are the worldly kings. They are ruling everyone. And you are the controller of them. You are called Rishikesha. You are the controller of senses. Krishna, you mentioned that although in Dwarka you are not the king, you do not have anything. Rukmini answers, you are bereft of all royal power. Not only you, your devotee also consider royal opulence to be insignificant. They are like impediments to this progress in spirituality. Your servants do not like material supremacy. To what to speak of you? Your devotees neglect wealth. So therefore you have also neglected wealth. People mention that you don't have a fixed aim in life. You don't have any goals. And that you gave up everyone, Nandi Maharaj, Radharani, and now here you are vagabond. The answer is, Rukmini Devi says, what of you? Even you are devotee. Great saint and sages, they are like that. In general, people always have difficulty understanding your devotees. They consider your devotees to be crazy and cynical. Their aim of life, the devotee's aim of life, is mystery for everyone. What they are up to, no one knows. Because a contaminated person cannot understand the divine position of a devotee. What to speak of divine leela pastimes of you, O Krishna? If they can't understand your devotee, how they can understand you? Then the next one is how that all women who followed Krishna ultimately had to cry for the rest of her life. Then Rukmini Devi mentions that in the history, many great kings, Anga, Prithu, Bharat, Yayati, great emperors, they had no competitors. Still, they gave up everything to achieve favor of your feet. Therefore, after giving up everything, they were not bereaved. They were most happy, even though they gave up kingdom which was unrivaled. So no one becomes bereaved by your association. Everyone becomes joyful and happy. Then Krishna mentions about penniless, how he is penniless. Rich people are not interested, only poor people come to him. So Rukmini mentions, you are penniless, but you are not poor. Actually, everything comes from you. Hence, you do not require anything to possess. You yourself is everything. In fact, all controversy is resolved in you. You do not have anything, yet no one is richer than you. Rukmini tells Krishna. And it is mentioned that how rich do not come to you because they are puffed up, they are ignorant, they want sense gratification. So those who are in Maya, they don't go to Krishna. Therefore, they do not come to you. And beggars worship you. Who are these beggars? Liberated personalities. They are great souls. They have no material business. And therefore, they glorify you. So you say, Krishna, that I did not make intelligent choice. Well, I followed in the footsteps of this beggar liberated soul. And I made a perfect choice. Regarding Shishupal and Jayansand, they were insects in front of you. They are killed by your eternal time factor. You mentioned that marriage should be with equals. Yes. But even to get married, you need Krishna's grace, she mentions. So without your grace, no marriage can be performed. So in my case, whatever has come because of your grace. And then Rukmini mentions that almost we are ending now. We went over time. She mentions that you wanted me to select someone else. And why did I select you? And she mentions that in your track record of devotional service, great sages like Narad Muni became purified. Just by coming in touch with you, he received blessings of Goddess of Fortune. So once someone has heard about you and tasted your nectarian leelas, how can that person ever give up something for something very low? For a person who's in the grip of death, who will marry a person who's in the grip of death? A person who is fully into birth, old age, disease and death, who will take that person as husband? I accepted you after mature and deliberate decision. You may throw me anywhere, that's not my concern, but my ambition is to remain always with you. Unfortunate ladies who have not heard of you will take people like Shishupal, Jarasandha as their husbands. They do not know that their husbands are better than asses, bulls, working hard day and night to maintain their household. Their body, the husband's body, is a bag full of bunches of muscles, bundles of bones, pools of blood, all mixed with stool, urine, mucus, bile, polluted air, and on top, decorated by beards, mustaches, hairs, and nails. You are not attached to me, Rukmini says. That is natural, because you are self-satisfied. Whether you like me or not, my devotion is for you only. And just by your glance, I am happy. And my only ambition is that someday you will glance on me. When Krishna heard that, then Krishna speaks the last words. Rukmini, I have tested your chastity, your love, and you have passed the exam, Prabhupada says. I purposely wanted to agitate you, but I am surprised. Not a pinch of devotion to me was deviated. So Krishna mentions the honorary certificate. My dear honored wife, although I have thousands of wives, I do not think that any of them can love me more than you. Practical proof of your extraordinary position is, you never saw me just by hearing from me from a third person. Your faith on me was so strong that you sent me a letter expecting me to come. If I would have not come, you would have committed suicide. And then you saw your brother humiliated in front of you. In fact, later your brother was killed by Balramji. You suffered all this just so that you could get me. So in this way, Krishna honored Rukmini Devi as the most chaste lady, the epitome of everything. Srimati Rukmini Devi ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for a patient hearing. Sorry for going over time. Hare Krishna.